This is Akashvani. In the weekly program, Current Affairs, now we bring you a discussion on This Week in Parliament. The participants are K.G. Suresh and Vinay Kumar, political analysts. Moderator is Aditi Tandon, senior journalist.
After reconvening post the recess, the Parliament has passed some very important pieces of legislation, and we've also seen the introduction of some key laws. For instance, the draft law on immigration, which relates to the entry, stay and exit of foreigners in and from India. Apart from that, another important legislation that was passed by the Parliament this session was the Railway Amendment Act 2024, which basically relates to the powers of the Railway Board, the appointment of Railway Board chairman and members, plus a number of other provisions in order to make the railway processes and systems more effective. The third important legislation that we saw that was taken up and passed was the Oil Fields Regulation and Development Bill that basically, you know, amends an earlier parent act in order to make it more attractive for global companies and investors to enter the oil exploration markets in India. To discuss the bills passed and introduced in the Parliament post the recess, we have in our studios today senior journalist Vinay Kumar and political analyst K.G. Suresh. So Vinay, I will take the first question with you. We just want to understand how you think is the Railways Amendment Bill 2024 important, and what does it do generally for the overall functioning of the railways and for people who are using railway services?
That was long pending, I think, to streamline the administration and how the railway board functions and to give more powers to the general manager of different zones in railways so that projects are not lagging behind in implementation. As well as, you know, the railways used to be under the Public Works Department when it had started 1890, then 1905, it was amended again. The last one was, I think, in 1989. And now the two provisions have been clubbed together for the ease of administration and to oversee smooth working and overhaul of the entire system so that there is no lagging behind in functioning of the railways. And safety measures which have been of concern, we saw a lot of opposition voicing concern when this was being discussed in Parliament.
Here is what Union Railways Minister Mr. Ashwini Vaishnaw had to say about the Railways Amendment Bill 2024.
10 साल पहले रेलवे के जोनल ऑफिसेज में जनरल मैनेजर्स को डीआरएम्स को उनके पास जो पावर थे उसका अगर आज कंपैरिजन करें मैं सबको बहुत खुशी के साथ बताना चाहूंगा आज जनरल मैनेजर्स के पास किसी भी कॉन्ट्रैक्ट को एक्सेप्ट करने का 100% पावर है चाहे वो 10 करोड़ का प्रोजेक्ट हो टेंडर या वो 1,000 करोड़ का टेंडर हो उसको आज जनरल मैनेजर एक्सेप्ट करते हैं
As railways, you know, embarks upon the modernization projects at a rapid pace, and we are also on the verge of introducing super fast bullet train. Vande Bharat project is also well on the tracks, and so many Vande Bharat express trains are running. So there was a concern about safety and the optimum use of resources. Then we had the incident of stampede. So all these, so that immediate remedial actions can be taken in such situations, and when the railways are embarking upon laying down new lines, the survey done, the land acquisition. So all these things used to be, you know, taking a lot of time. So I think with this amendment in place, it will be just one law where the government will have to refer to.
K.G. Suresh, I'll bring you in into this particular discussion. One of the aspects of this particular bill, which Union Railway Minister Ashwini Vaishnaw pointed out during his reply to the discussion, was that the GMs, the general managers who are looking after zones, will now have the power to accept contracts worth 1,000 crore. These contracts have to relate to redevelopment work in the railways, plus also any contract with respect to railway safety. What was happening earlier is that for every such approval, the GM would have had to go to the railway board, which would be time consuming, and that would obviously have its own costs. If you could comment on that part, plus also the part that there is a lot of concern with respect to railway safety. And the minister pointed out during the discussion that about 1 lakh crore is the annual budget for railway safety under the BJP-led government. And yet, you know, there are concerns. How do you look at this whole discussion?
Well, Aditi, we are talking about one of the largest railway networks in the world. And it is but natural that, you know, it is facing a lot of challenges. It has always faced, whether in terms of passenger amenities, passenger safety, as you rightly pointed out, and also the very delicate balance that needs to be struck between the railways earning enough money to maintain itself as also ensuring that it's a public service. So it has to be that subsidy part is also there. It's highly subsidized, you see, and it's one of the cheapest in the world. So we need to keep that also in mind. So how to make this huge machinery very efficient? That is a big challenge. Also the fact that, you know, a lot of committees have gone into it, the Sridharan committee, and a lot of committees have gone into it, and they have been giving suggestions from time to time that there is a need for an overhaul of the entire railway system. That, of course, there have been from time to time reforms like the one that the minister pointed out, also including the devolution of powers, the decentralization, you know, the railway boards, the different zones. So, you know, how to devolve power and decentralize decision making. That's, of course, part of a very efficient. I'm sure that along with that, there are major concerns that also would be addressed. For example, that you have on the one hand passenger and freight. But there are also issues like the huge assets that railways have. Catering is another major thing. So how to even engage public-private partnerships, how to bring about more private participation in many aspects of the railways, which would turn railways have, I would say, in terms of real estate, I think they are next only to the armed forces in terms of their the huge size that they have of the properties across the country. So they are sitting on gold mine, yet, you know, they are cash strapped for many important issues, like you said. So though money is being, but please remember the traffic is going up. Yet, if you look at a route wise thing, you will find that they are not making profits. How to make it profitable, yet ensure that, you know, the common man takes advantage. And today, with the Prime Minister bringing in the Udaan scheme, and we are talking about from Hawaii chappal to a Hawaii jahaz. So there is, the airlines are also, many people are opting, the middle class and now even the lower middle class. You have now tier 2, tier 3 cities which are having small airstrips. They are also starting commercial operations. So in many destinations where railway used to be the only option, air travel has become the first preference. Now in this scenario, how do you ensure that, you know, we cater to the large number of audience, attract the premium, you know, like bullet trains that Vinayji mentioned. And also for occasions like the Mahakumbh, I mean, people just did not have enough seats, reserved seats, despite all the efforts put in by. So I think that this bill, I believe, tries to give more autonomy to the railway board and particularly the railway zones, and empowers it to decentralize decisions, decision making. And I'm sure that that would certainly help in streamlining and making the railways much more efficient than what it was.
Right. These are some very valid points, Vinay. And taking this cue from what K.G. Suresh just said, the competitiveness of the railways. So one of the provisions in this new bill is also related to the appointment and establishment of an independent regulator that will oversee matters such as fare determination in the railways and ensure what K.G. Suresh just mentioned. How do you make the railways profitable, viable, while ensuring that it's a larger subsidized public service, a section meant for the classes, a section also meant for the masses. So how do you see this independent regulator being set up?
Railways are already on a few years back, they have already introduced dynamic pricing in their tickets. And as you rightly said, Aditi, that railways still remains the cleanest form of travel, energy efficient and highly subsidized by the government. But at the same time, as Prime Minister on many occasions has pointed out, that aspirations of our countrymen are very high, and they also want to experience the best which the railways has to offer in India as compared to other parts of the world, where high speed trains like TGV in France or U-Rail in Europe or Japan and China are way ahead of other countries as far as speed is concerned and the modernization of railways is concerned. And railways, it remains a highly capital intensive area, laying of railway tracks, then procuring rolling stock and their maintenance. like this Vande Bharat project, if you talk about, if we would have got the Spanish model, the Spanish trains, which had made a presentation during the Modi government's first tenure. So the thinking in Prime Minister's office, which was Prime Minister led that route of thinking that if we have the capability, why can't we do it ourselves? And that was how our integral coach factory in Chennai, this project was, Train 18 project was launched, and we came up with the Vande Bharat train. Although many MPs have also pointed out that the speed of Shatabdi, which was introduced at least 3 decades ago, and Vande Bharat trains, the difference is not much. But railways is also very, safety remains a prime concern, as the minister, Mr. Ashwini Vaishnaw, pointed out during discussion in his reply. But at the same time, if we compare to Europe or the other Western countries, the cost of laying down railway track is very, very high. And that is what is happening in bullet train project from Ahmedabad to Mumbai. That is why it is taking so much of time. And it is not that India cannot do these things on its own. Our Delhi metro is a case in point. Now we have metros in other places. In Kerala, we have metro. In Odisha, we have metro. Calcutta was the first one to have underground metro. So we have done that. We have the capability. We have the expertise. But the only thing is that if your railway track is not fenced all the way, let's assume from New Delhi to Amritsar, it's nearly 500 some kilometers. Or New Delhi to Lucknow, it is also 515 kilometers. There are so many unmanned railway crossings. You know, the cattle come in between. We have seen 3, 4, or half a dozen incidents of Vande Bharat trains getting hit by cattle. So in Europe, in France or in UK, you know, in Spain, all these tracks are fenced throughout. So it involves a cost. And if the independent regulator comes in and there is already a dynamic ticket pricing, and there was already an allegation by the opposition parties that, you know, number of sleeper coaches have been reduced and the number of air-conditioned coaches have gone up, which the government refuted. And it was pointed out that many trains have now restored the number of sleeper coaches for the general public. It remains the prime mode of transport for the common people. So I think the government cannot do much tinkering with the railway fare. Now we don't have a separate railway budget.
KG, I wanted to ask you one particular thing, which is a matter of debate. A lot of opposition leaders also mentioned it during the discussion on this bill. What was said was that 70% of the resources of Indian railways are currently being deflected or being set aside for pension and salary purposes. So now where does that leave us? Because it needs investment in capacity building the railways. It also needs more internal resource mobilization. So there are multiple challenges, like Vinay just brought out other challenges. And then there is this whole pressing challenge of ensuring railway safety. The minister did tell the parliament that the annual accident rate in the railways has actually declined from 171 to 30. But obviously, the minister admitted that we have to have a zero accident rate, and that is what the government is working towards. And one data that was shared in Parliament by Mr. Ashwini Vaishnaw was that all 9,000 unmanned crossings are today either manned by personnel, or there is an underpass, or there is a flyover to help people cross these areas, like Vinay just expressed his apprehension about unmanned crossings. How does railways do this internal resource mobilization? What are the options?
Absolutely. When it comes to employees, the regular employees, obviously you can't fiddle with them. And whatever commitments have been made in terms of pensions, that cannot be changed. Of course, now the new pension scheme is there for the new employees. And, you know, so that way, but these are promises that you have to keep. But having said that, I think that there is a lot of scope for financial management. And that's what the railways are trying to do. In terms of, you know, as I said, that it is one of the biggest real estate owners in the country. I mean, in terms of prime property in major cities, metros, the kind of property it has in Delhi, for instance. You have railway colonies spread across several acres, which can be converted into the way we are now transforming South Delhi, the Nauroji Nagars and the Sarojini Nagars. They all can go vertical, and you know that land can be utilized for building, not only for employees, but we can also sublet it further, sublease it further. So you have, and then the catering part of it, you know, you have a huge market out there which is waiting to be tapped. You have, as I said, that many services today which are available, which can be including apps, you can have specialized services like, video for in terms of entertainment that can be provided. Wi-Fi services can be provided, of course, on payment. So it is the creativity and the imagination of the managers that they will have to, now that the powers have been decentralized, and so now it is for them to really think that, because here is a government which is open to ideas, which is not conservative in its outlook when it comes to reforms, when it comes to passenger amenities. So how can we ensure that these facilities are available to the people at, of course, the common man's rate, but because of the large volumes involved, there are people who are interested in them. Mm-hmm. So internal mobilization is certainly a challenge, but also an opportunity, as I see it.
Right. That's also very well put. Now let's move forward and discuss a bit about the Manipur budget, that was passed, that was presented by Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman in Lok Sabha as part of the supplementary demands for grants, and it was passed. Obviously, we all know that the proclamation for president's rule was imposed in Manipur, which gives the Parliament of India the power to pass the budget. What do you have to say about the scale of the budget?
I think the highlight was there was no contingency fund in Manipur. So Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman made a provision of rupees 500 crores for that. Other things were the same. I think about 900 crores or so the appropriation bill was passed, so that the government can draw from the Consolidated Fund of India, and they need Parliament's permission to do that. I think it was more technical and legislative compulsion because Manipur is under governor's rule. So that is why the need for appropriation bill to get the nod of Parliament was necessary of the Lok Sabha. It was passed without any hitch, and the best thing was that Manipur will now have a contingency fund. The government is trying its best to put law and restore law and order and have free movement, as Union Home Minister had said. So that experiment is still going on. There have been some incidents of violence over the past, I think, week or so. That is why this budgetary technicality was to be accomplished.
Now, coming to another landmark legislation draft bill, Vinay, that was introduced in Lok Sabha by Minister of State for Home Nityanand Rai, the Immigration and Foreigners Bill 2025, a much talked about draft legislation right now, and basically a comprehensive legislation to regulate every matter that relates to foreigners and immigration. Now, what this particular umbrella law is going to do is, it is going to repeal 4 existing acts that currently deal with these provisions. These acts are the Passport Entry into India Act of 1920, the Registration of Foreigners Act of 1939, the Foreigners Act of 1946, and the Immigration Carriers Liability Act of 2000. What, according to you?
These 4 existing laws which you mentioned, so the aim is to consolidate them and have one bill for tightening the existing regulations. So it imposes heavier penalties in the prison term for violation of provisions of this bill if it becomes an act and a law. And another very interesting feature and highlight of this was that when it adds more teeth to the existing rules, presently under this carriers, which you said under the Immigration Carriers Liability Act. So this bill makes it mandatory for the carrier in which any foreigner has entered the country to remove the foreigner from India at its own expense. So the airline or the ship, the waterways, through waterways, if somebody is coming or landing in India. So it will be the responsibility of the carrier to remove that foreigner from India if the person is found to have violated any provision of the proposed law. So I think this is adding more teeth to the existing regulations, and there are security concerns on the entry of foreigners. But Mr. Nityanand Rai also quickly clarified that it was the government's responsibility to ensure peace and sovereignty of the nation remains intact, but the government was not against arrival of, it's not becoming unwelcoming of for tourists and the foreigners who come to India.
So basically, KG Suresh, the government has said that mandatory requirement will now be there of valid travel documents for entry into, stay in and exit from India. Second thing that this bill does is constitution of a Bureau of Immigration. It also talks about power of deportation of illegal foreigners from India. And for the first time, mandates essential reporting of information with respect to foreigners by all institutions, which means hotels, universities, educational institutions, hospitals, nursing facilities, which have foreigners on their premises, have to actually notify the government about the presence of such people. And another important feature of this bill that I was reading was that it allows the government to remove a foreigner in the name of national security, sovereignty, integrity.
And even relations with foreign countries.
Yeah. So can you elaborate on the how important is the bill in the current scenario?
Aditi, there have been very serious concerns about the influx of foreigners into the country and how many have got into the voter list. Many have managed to obtain Aadhaar cards, you know, through illegal means and found their place in the electoral rolls. So a large number of economic migrants are there. And of course, there are genuine cases of religious persecution in the neighborhood who have actually come here. But here we are talking about how, under the guise of study, under the guise of visiting some relative, a lot of people are coming from particularly South Asian neighborhood. And then they are not leaving the country, which is a matter of serious concern. Now, because almost all South Asians look alike, it's not easy for the police or the authorities also to identify them by face. So obviously there has to be a mechanism in place. And that is why you have stringent provisions now to ensure that whether it is hospitals, as you rightly pointed out, hotels, homestays, and in fact, there are provisions wherein even if you have a relative from any foreign country who is at your place, you are also, and that is, I think they are working it out through the website, that you also have to report about their presence at your residence. So it's not confined to only the hotels, but also at residences. So I think that this is to ensure that, because a lot of people, particularly foreign agents, militants, they are all taking advantage of this mercenaries and they are trying to create problems within the country. So it is important in view of the security of the country that, you know, the entry of foreigner, and that is taken care of across the, this is not new to India. Everywhere we, having traveled to so many countries, we know that, you know, how they maintain a close surveillance on the presence of foreigners. So I think that these are very important steps, particularly given the porous nature of our borders. I think that it is very important to ensure that the number of people who are coming here, the foreigners who come here illegally are sent back, are deported. We see that many countries are taking now very stringent measures. We have seen what the United States is doing. So in the larger national interest, in the larger interest of our economy also, I think it is very important that such tight measures are taken.
More to do with the monitoring process, you know, because this law also mandates that the host, who, as KG was pointing out, who may also be the owner of a private home, must provide all the details to the FRRO, and which can probably be done online. You don't have to visit. So it will provide, enable better monitoring of...
So what happens through such a provision is that you actually are able to track the overstaying foreigners.
Yes, that is the whole idea.
Yeah.
That if you come for a particular visit, say you have come for hospitalization and treatment, there are medical tourism is being promoted like anything. So a lot of people from neighboring countries and other countries are coming to India for treatment. Now, after that, they should go back. So this is very important that while we are promoting tourism, but at the same time, it should not become a pretext or excuse for anybody to stay back and then start their own business. And we are seeing such instances in places like Goa and many other places where people in Himachal Pradesh and Manali. Then we have cases of drug abuse. We have cases of many such instances where foreigners have been caught doing all these nefarious activities also. So that also needs to be monitored, you know. So it's in the interest of the society, interest of the national security, and also one of the reasons for deportation could be relations with foreign countries also.
Right.
So that is also very important.
So Vinay, what the government has said while piloting this bill is that the bill actually seeks to balance the requirements of national security and the related issues of immigration of foreigners with the need to promote economic growth and tourism in the country. So a balance will be struck. Plus, they have also issued a categorical clarification saying that this bill is not connected in any manner with issues related to grant of citizenship, because there was some confusion.
The grant of citizenship is a different area altogether. So it should not be, it was rightly pointed out, it should not be confused or related to this bill.
Right. Last major bill that was taken up in the parliament, which is the Oil Field Exploration and Development Bill, which actually amends an existing Parent Act And as I said earlier in my remarks, basically the Lok Sabha has cleared this bill and it was passed by Rajya Sabha in December last year. And piloting this bill, Petroleum and Natural Gas Minister Hardeep Singh Puri said that India is the only country in the world where prices of petrol and diesel have actually come down in the past 3 years. And he also said, while assuring the House that the government was working to keep the costs of fuel low, let's listen to what the Petroleum and Natural Gas Minister Hardeep Singh Puri had to say.
There is more oil in the world coming on the global market, particularly from the Western Hemisphere. Let me give you the example of Brazil. It used to make 3 million barrels a day. They're bringing up another 140,000 barrels a day. Guyana, Suriname, Canada, the US. US is the world's largest producer. It produces 13 million barrels a day, bringing on another 1.6 million barrels. There is no shortage of supply. Therefore, if you are a large consumer, which we are as India, we are one of the largest consumers, we can leverage that market consumption card to diversify and buy from the cheapest source. I have therefore no doubt in my mind that we will be able to navigate this trilemma in the years to come with equal success under Prime Minister Modi's leadership.
He said that this particular bill is going to enhance global investment into the oil exploration sector in India. What does the bill do? I mean, how do you make a layman understand what this bill may?
The energy security, Aditi, we all know is a very important, a very crucial area. Like we talk of national security, so the energy security is also the key pillar for the development and progress of the country. So it makes, you know, the legal framework governing this oil and gas exploration, it makes the sector more attractive to investors while ensuring long-term energy security, for which we have so many long-term agreements with not only with the Gulf countries, but the major part of our energy requirements, we get it from outside, we import. And this aligns with the international best practices. The amendments aim to create a stable and predictable regulatory environment, which is crucial for expanding exploration and production activities. So over the last decade, if you see, the government has implemented a series of strategic reforms to promote the domestic hydrocarbon sector. And we are also moving towards, apart from oil and gas exploration, right, clean energy like wind and solar. That's a different area altogether. And Mr. Puri, as you said, he also, you know, on the importance of energy consumption as a key indicator of economic performance, he said that India's crude oil consumption has risen from 5 million barrels per day 3.5 years ago to 5.5 million barrels per day. So with continued economic growth, this figure is projected to reach 6.5 to 7 million barrels per day. So
right,
if we look at all these things, we need this.
K.G. Suresh, like Vinay has explained the technical part of this new particular bill. So what it is actually doing is, it is expanding the government's continuing policy of ease of doing business. So if you look at the granular detail, what it is doing is, it is aiming to decriminalize some of the provisions of the original Oil Fields Regulation and Development Act of 1948, the parent act that this bill seeks to amend, by introducing penalties, adjudication by an adjudication authority, and appeal as against the order of adjudication authority, rather than punitive measures that were part of the original act. So you're decriminalizing this, you know, sector, which will make the sector attractive for global investors.
Absolutely. We have huge untapped potential. And unfortunately, in all these decades, we have not been able to, of course, ONGC, from Dick Boy to Bombay High, we have done a lot of exploration. But we find that new oil reserves, because at the end of the day, though we are talking about non-conventional energy resources and a lot of work is being done, solar parks are being built, wind energy is being tapped, hydro power is there, nuclear power is there. But in the long term, fuel is a very important thing. We are, of course, working on ethanol and all that also. But having said that, for the next couple of centuries, we need an energy security. Like national security, energy security is a very important thing, and we need that so to attract a global investment.
Right. So on that note, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
You were listening to a discussion on This Week in Parliament. The participants were K.G. Suresh and Vinay Kumar, political analysts. Moderator was Aditi Tandon, senior journalist. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.